Welcome back to another episode of Better Than I Found It, the podcast, all things college golf. You're listening to Mike McGraw, the men's golf coach at Baylor. My guest on Better Than I Found It today is Kansas State men's golf coach, Grant Robbins. Grant is a really good friend of mine, great colleague, and has done a great job at Kansas State all through his career, but also has done a fantastic job this fall, his team coming out of the gates with three consecutive victories. He's one of the hot coaches in college golf, and his team is very, very good. So I hope you enjoy the interview with Grant. Thanks. All right, Better Than I Found It listeners, give me a big shout out and a welcome to Kansas State men's golf coach, Grant Robbins, joining me on the podcast today. Grant, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. You know, this podcast has had a mixture of current players, former players, college coaches, retired coaches, swing instructors. We've had about everything on here. And it's really, really exciting when I get to have another coach, especially a colleague, somebody we compete against on here to get your ideas and perspectives. And you're one of many coaches I've had on here, and it's really exciting to have you.
Awesome. Yeah, glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's do this. Let's get my listeners up to speed on who you are, where you've been, and just your backstory before you got to Kansas State. You've been there, I believe, 8 years, going on 9, correct?
Yeah, that's right. So I played golf in college. I'd say as a junior golfer, I was kind of a late bloomer. I didn't really get serious about the game of golf till I was around 14. Played some other sports and then, you know, really got serious about it in high school and decided, you know, I'd like to try to play in college, and definitely wasn't highly recruited. So, you know, I had some opportunities at some smaller schools, but really wanted to try to play Division I and went to University of Memphis as a walk-on. Started there, redshirted my first year, and then just, you know, gradually improved. And then, you know, by my senior year, I was playing number one man and had some success. And, you know, everyone has the dream of playing professional golf. So I gave that a shot and, you know, did the mini tour stuff for about 2 years. And, you know, that wasn't for me. You know, obviously I wasn't quite good enough, but even when I was in college, I had an interest in coaching. And, you know, back then, you know, the coaching profession wasn't at all what it is now. But it was something that I was interested in. But it was, you know, there wasn't as many avenues back then, you know, to get in. You know, not everybody had assistant coaches. And so just kind of trying to figure out what I wanted to do. So I went back to school and I got my master's degree, and that was, you know, doing some things like actually doing an internship with FedEx in sports marketing with them while I was getting my master's. And then saw an opportunity at Penn State. The coach that I played for, Jim Cook at Memphis, you know, was knew Greg Nye and gave him a call for me and kind of went from there. And I went up to, you know, to State College, you know, sight unseen, and met with Greg. And I just remember him telling me, and he's like, "You do not want this job. You know, you just, it's, if we can't pay you, it's like, I've got a master's degree and, you know, I'm going to get paid $12,000. And so I was like, you know, I really want to coach. I want to make this work. So I went up there and got started coaching and just, you know, really fell in love with that. And, you know, and I had to make ends meet. So I was teaching classes and doing camps and doing everything I could to, you know, kind of to make things work. But, you know, had a great experience up there. You know, it's a great college town, and we had a good team with the regionals both years that I was there. And then from there, I got opportunity to go be the head coach at UNC Wilmington. And that was a school that I thought had tons of potential. The funding there wasn't the best at the time, but I just saw a lot of potential, you know, with their location. And so I went there, and I was there for 4 years. You know, by, you know, our fourth year there, we made regionals for the first time in school history. Had a really good team, and, you know, got the news that my college coach, Jim Cook, passed away. He had a heart attack, died suddenly in the fall of 2002, I believe. And, you know, in the back of my mind, I always kind of, you know, wanted to coach my alma mater. You know, I went to school at Memphis, and And I actually talked to, Coach Cook and I used to talk about, when he retires, maybe I could take over one day. And, that opportunity came, unexpectedly, with his passing, but, they brought me in and I had to make a tough decision. I didn't really want to leave my team at Wilmington because we were really good, but the opportunity to go to your alma mater was, too much to pass up. So went to Memphis and, I took over a program there that, I think we're ranked, probably in the 120s or so. And took a couple of years to kind of get that turned around and got to NCAA regionals there, I think for the first time in 20 years. And then we got kind of on a run. We made regionals, I think, 4 years in a row. And then we made the national championship in 2012, won the conference championship. So we had some success, had a really good group of guys there. And then my wife is from Kansas. She was a K-State alum. And then, Tim Norris, announced his retirement. And I think, I wasn't really looking to move. I was really happy at Memphis. That's where I'm from. But, there's also, time in college athletics. There's, with the Power Five and the funding that's available there and those opportunities. I said, I'll listen. And then remember meeting with, Kansas State and seeing the meeting with the administration and seeing everything they had to offer and then competing in a conference like the Big 12. I figured, that's probably, the next step, to try to compete at the highest level. So I made the move to K-State and, it's just, Manhattan's just a great, college town, a great community. We have a young family and it's been, a great place for us to raise our family. And, it's been a really good move for us. And so took over the program here from Coach Norris. It was a really good foundation. It's a really good group of kids that we inherited, really good students but just hasn't had success. The first couple of years it was tough trying to be, I think we were ranked, maybe 120, 125 or so. And so trying to, create a culture where, we can compete at the highest level. Obviously the Big 12 is the absolute best conference in college golf and top to bottom, every single team is good. And so, trying to compete at that level and it's, it took a few years. But we, gradually, I think we just started getting a little bit better. And I think it was 2018, 2019. We had a really, really good spring. We won a tournament in Florida. I think we were, top five just about every event. We started the spring, ranked, I think, right around 100. We got all the way up to, right in the bubble range. I think we were 60 or 61. And then felt like we had done enough to make it. And then it just so happened that was the year when kind of everything went against us as far as that the number was the lowest it had ever been, in the history of it. And we actually missed by one spot. I think the 60 was the number. We were ranked 61. Missed by one spot. We had three guys make it as individuals. So that was kind of tough to go to a regional with three individuals. But I think it was a good experience and, left our guys. That was a really good group of guys that worked hard. And it was unfortunate that they didn't get the reward of making it as a team. But, three guys, Jeremy Gandon and Roland Massimino and Jake Eklund, got to play as individuals. And they really help, build a good foundation for our program. And then, just the last couple of years, we've just been kind of knocking on the door. I think, we had the COVID year, but then, 2021, I think we missed regionals by two or three spots. And then last year, we kind of finally broke through and, made it to postseason. It's the first time, that K-State's been to postseason in a while. And then I think what's been good for us is we've had the same core group that played last year and had some ups and downs, but they just got tons of experience and being able to break through and get to regionals, even though we didn't play our best at regionals in advance. It was a good experience for them and then left them hungry over the summer and they worked and got better. And, we've had a pretty good start to the fall.
Well, yes, we're going to talk about that here in a minute. Heck of a backdrop story there. I didn't realize a couple of those coaching positions you had were before I ever knew you. You don't look old enough to have coached that long ago, so congratulations on that. But I will say this, there's a certain grit, or I don't know, maybe it's grit, that it takes to rebuild a program. And I know you haven't had to do a complete rebuild at any of these schools, but none of the schools were ranked very high when you went to work for them. What do you think is something about your personality or your work ethic? What is it about you that has the ability to take something that's maybe not highly ranked and try to send it another direction? Is that something you think you can do? I mean, you've done it, so.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, it just so happens that, you know, every program I went to, it's, you know, it was, you know, at UNC Wilmington, I think it was, yeah, the pieces were in place as far as like location and things like that. But, you know, I just saw potential. And I think going there, you had to, you know, I think we could be good here. And then you try to get some people interested in the community and, you know, you raise some money and you can do some things. And then, you know, you start to see some success. And then, you know, I think, you know, the program there has been very successful over the last, you know, with, you know, several different coaches that have done really, really well there. And then, you know, same thing in Memphis. It was just kind of, you know, just changing the culture and, you know, it's all about players. You got to have really good players and you got to have players that buy in and want to compete. And then, you know, kind of the same thing at K-State. And, you know, I don't know, it just so happens that those are the jobs that I got that, you know, might not have been ranked the highest, but, you know, I think that's something I love a challenge, you know, just kind of, you know, my background, I fought my way in onto making a college team, started off as a walk-on and, you know, I had to work my way up and, you know, I've always kind of liked that underdog mentality. And so I guess that kind of translates into the coaching a little bit, maybe.
Maybe it does. I mean, it's obvious you've actually worked in some schools that seemed as underdogs, but you don't seem like an underdog right now. Your team is playing very, very well. In fact, let's go over that a little bit. I've got some other questions I want to ask you about different people and different parts of your career, but and a little bit about college golf in general, how it's changed, because I know it's changed since I was an assistant for Mike Holder early on, but so many things in recent years have made a change. But one good change you've made this year is your team won the first three events out of the gates this year. You won the Wildcat Invitational. I guess you hosted at Colbert Hills, I'm sure.
Right. Yep.
The Old Town Collegiate, I think, hosted by Wake Forest. And then the Oregon State Invitational. Talk about that hot start. You mentioned earlier that you have the same core group still here. So maybe they're finally maturing to get to the level of golf that you hope they'd play, but that's a heck of a start. And then we're going to talk about the Big 12 match play, because we both competed in that this week.
Sure. Yeah.
Talk about those three wins.
Yeah. I think that's it. I think it's just the maturity. You know, I knew this group was going to be really good and yeah, there's just something about them. You know, they all work really, really hard. And it's more of a belief kind of thing. And, you know, they just keep putting in the work and then, you know, eventually you're going to start seeing success and just keep persevering. And, that's something that they, you know, they did last year. And I think, you know, kind of getting over that hurdle of making regionals, you know, something that's always been a goal of ours is, you know, we got to get back to postseason and, you know, and then, you know, we made it through last year. So we kind of cleared that hurdle, but the difference that I've seen with this group this year is just that maturity. And, you know, being, you know, there's been times where we've been in the hunt before and maybe, you know, we didn't quite close, you know, in that final round, but that experience kind of made them tougher and that's something they can draw on. And, you know, we saw that this year when we had chances to win, you know, they persevered and they got it done. And that's, you know, I think each tournament was a little bit different this year. You know, our home tournament, we got out to such a big lead that, you know, the last round was more of, you know, our guys kind of competing against each other for the individual. And then at Wake Forest, they really had to fight. You know, we had a lead going in the back nine and we lost that lead. And you know, it was some pressure in those last few holes. And, you know, them being able to come through, we kind of faltered a little bit, you know, halfway through that final round. But then those last few holes, they finished strong. And then I think that really, you know, I saw them really grow up that week. And then Oregon State, you know, we had the lead going in the last round again. And they were just in complete control of that entire round. And, you know, that's what I've seen the change is just the maturity, the poise, just kind of sticking with the game plan and, you know, not making many mistakes.
Well, that's great. That's great to hear. It's great when barriers are broken. And obviously your team has not ever won three events in a row. In fact, few teams do that. That's a tough thing to do in college golf. So great start to the year. I think you're probably the highest ranking ever in the history of Kansas State golf, I think. 17th.
Yes. So yeah, it's you know, if you look back at, you know, Golf Stat with their rankings, I think the best that they finished the season in is 41, maybe. Mm-hmm. You know, it's some really good teams, you know, with Robert Strebles here and Aaron Watkins and Ben Curran and some of those guys. And so we had some really good teams, but you know, this, I think this is you know, best ranking for a while anyway.
Okay, so tell me about Robert Streb. I mean, has he gotten close to the program?
Yeah. So, you know, I tell the story about Robert is, you know, like the first time that I've met him, I was actually coaching at Memphis and I was caddying for one of my players there at the U.S. Open qualifier. And it was the final qualifier there at the PGA Tour stop in Memphis. And we were paired together and we were playing at Colonial Country Club. And I remember him, Robert Knight, getting off to a good start. I think he maybe was, you know, hit a couple balls in the water on maybe his fourth or fifth hole. And I think he shot maybe 76 or 77 that first round. And then, you know, that week, you know, because you got the tour event going on, you know, that week, you know, most guys are withdrawing, you know, after 18 holes and going to the tour site and getting ready for that week. But, you know, Robert came back out. And I remember playing on the South course, which was the tougher course of the two. And just played just a flawless round of 67, you know, he just kind of found something. And, you know, and he went out that week, and I think he finished top 20 in the tour event there in Memphis. And, you know, just telling my guys, you know, I remember telling my Memphis team, you know, about, you know, Robert, and just like, you know, you never know when you're going to find something. You know, you might not have it, but you just keep grinding and, you know, something might start clicking. And then, you know, obviously he found something that started clicking and, you know, had a really good week. And, you know, he's kept his card ever since. And then, you know, my first year here at K-State was when he won his first tour event, you know, down there, down at Sea Island. And it was pretty funny. He came to Manhattan that very next week, and I played golf with him and Aaron Watkins and my former assistant, Cullen Carstens. You know, we had a kind of a little four-ball match with them, Manhattan Country Club. So that was a fun time. And then I got to go to the Masters, his first Masters appearance, you know, there, I think in 2014 or 2015. And, you know, watched him compete at the Masters for the first time. So it's, you know, it's been cool following his career. And you're exactly right. I love the way he plays. You know, he doesn't wear a glove. He's got the 10-finger grip, the ex-hockey player, and just goes out just highly, highly competitive, very confident. You know, you talk about grit. He's got grit. And, you know, it's just been a good player to watch.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And his instructor played high school golf for me, Tosh Hayes. And Tosh has talked – every once in a while, Tosh will ask me a question about Robert just to get my opinion. And I said, Tosh, don't ask me. You're the one that's teaching him, and you're doing a great job with him. I think there's some value in what Tosh has done. He's allowed Robert to be Robert instead of trying to put him in – some other box, you know, that looks right. Different. Robert's just a very, very unique golfer and a throwback. And you mentioned Cullen Carstens,
yes.
That was your assistant. Obviously he was my volunteer assistant at Oklahoma State. And Cullen is a fantastic guy. Do you still keep in touch with Cullen?
Yeah, I do. Actually, he was the one that was trying to call me just now.
Was he really?
So Cullen, I actually saw him. He came up, you know, to Houston, or he's down in Houston now working for TrackMan. And, you know, he came out to Big 12 match play. So I got to catch up with him a little bit the other day. But yeah, we talked quite a bit. And he's a great guy. He did a really good job for us. You know, I moved on to be a head coach, and now he's, you know, got a really good job working for TrackMan, doing well.
Yeah, Cullen did a great job at Oklahoma State when I was there, and a really good guy. And he taught me what EMAW meant, and I'd never had to know it. I had seen it. Every man a Wildcat. Do you y'all obviously use that a lot, don't you?
We sure do. Yep.
That's great. Well, one other person I want to ask you about, Jim Colbert.
Yes.
Jim obviously is one of the most famous, you know, Kansas State Wildcats in history, and was a college football player, was a lot of different things. Speaking of grit, I mean, he got about as much grit as you could possibly imagine right there. And maybe misunderstood. Would you say Jim might be misunderstood in the outside world or not?
You know, that's hard to say. You know, he's you know, a great ambassador for K-State. You know, obviously our home golf course is named after him, and he was, you know, very instrumental in getting the golf course built. You know, he loves K-State. K-State through and through. You know, from a golf standpoint, you know, just having talked to him, you know, he's one of the most confident people, you know, you'll ever talk to. And that's, you know, that's what you got to have, you know, to achieve at that high level. You got to have a lot of self-confidence. And, you know, and he's obviously very competitive, very driven. And, you know, that's, you know, something you can learn from that is, you know, how he comes about, you know, knowing that he's good. And, you know, that's what made him very, very successful as a player. And like I said, you know, he's just, you know, great ambassador for K-State and, you know, very, very driven and competitive person.
Well, I think
still is.
Yeah, oh, definitely. But part of being competitive like that and part of being driven and part of having all that confidence, sometimes people don't like that. Sometimes people think that rubs them the wrong way. And so I had a great amount of respect for him because he won 8 times in the PGA Tour. And I don't know how many times on that Champions Tour, but probably 25 to 30, a lot. And we were playing the regional in 2003 at Colbert Hills. And I think it was really the first event Colbert Hills had ever hosted. Mm-hmm. And they had a banquet, a dinner, and Jim was going to speak. And I was wondering to myself, what is Jim going to talk about? And I had no idea, but I wanted to listen. And I'll never forget it. It's probably the greatest speech I've ever heard from a golfer to this day. And basically he said this: if I play 30 tournaments a year, I'm only going to have my really A game for about 7 or 8. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be really bad for about 8, and mm-hmm. I'll be medium for about 10 on the others. So what I tried to do was, when I was really bad, was figure out a way to make a cut. Just figure it out. Just if I can make the cut. If I'm playing my medium game, just make the cut, try to make as much money as I could. And if I've got my A game, go as deep and as far as I can to either win or compete to win. And he said, really, that's how a guy that's undersized like me made it in professional golf. I just literally understood who I was, and I maximized it when I had my game going. And I thought to myself, that's pretty good advice for these young guys. And so has he given you any nuggets or pearls of wisdom that you thought were really good that could help you as a coach?
He was like, go get some good players. he's been great, and you know, it's about competing, and you know, just that mindset, and like you hit the nail on the head. He's just, you got to just go out there and figure out a way to get it done. And you know, that's something that he was really good at, and that's something we try to preach to our guys all the time, is just try to get the most out of what you can each day. And you know, got to have that self-belief and that grit and, you know, go in.
He's definitely got it. Well, you know, we mentioned Colbert Hills. It's obviously a great selling point for your university and for recruiting to Kansas State men's golf, but are there any future facility upgrades or anything you're going to do to change the facility, or is there anything in that in the works?
Yeah. And our facilities have really evolved, you know, since I got here. I think, you know, when I got here, I think our biggest need at that time was to have, you know, a dedicated team short game facility. One thing that was unique with Colbert Hills is they had a 9-hole par-3 course that was utilized by, you know, the first tee program here and you know, the public. And, you know, it's just, it was doing well, but it was, you know, it takes away from, you know, the maintenance of the championship course, and, you know, probably wasn't in the best of shape at the time. And, you know, we had a couple options. You know, do we go and try to find land to build our own, you know, short game facility, or, you know, is there an opportunity that we can maybe utilize the space that's already here to benefit the golf program? So, started with some discussions, you know, with, you know, our athletic director and you know, the folks at Colbert Hills, and we kind of found a, you know, solution that athletics would kind of take over the operation of the par-3 course. So we basically fund the maintenance of it, and which is now turned into our own private 9-hole short game facility. So we've got a great superintendent, Matt Gourlay, who, you know, does a fantastic job on keeping that in shape and getting the green speeds where we need them to. And, you know, that's been huge in not only our recruiting, but it's also been huge in our preparation, you know, being able to simulate, you know, the conditions that we're going to see on the road as much as possible. And then just having, you know, place, we got, you know, 9 holes that our guys can just go and, you know, take balls out and try and get better. And, you know, you can pretty much hit any shot you want to on that place. And, you know, that's probably been the biggest thing over the last few years that's really helped our recruiting and our player development. And then, you know, we also have aspirations, you know, here we're our next step is want to build a clubhouse facility. We got great facilities. We got everything we need from us, from a functional standpoint, but, you know, in this day and age with recruiting, it's the, you know, what you have as far as what you can show with the facilities and everything. And we're going to have a dedicated clubhouse for the team, and with an indoor short game area, you know, hopefully we can get that done here in the next few years.
Well, that is great. You know, I think that's one of the great things. It's been a great benefit for college golf, the sort of arms race, if you will, you know, teams really dedicating or universities dedicating a lot of money to facilities. And up north, those teams have mitigated the negative recruiting aspect of not having the good weather up north with incredible indoor facilities. So, you know, I bet when Jim Colbert played golf at Kansas State, I bet he never dreamed that you would have a facility like you all have right now.
No, not at all.
Yeah, you could not imagine that. Well, tell me about your team. We actually saw you guys for the first time this past week at Houston Oaks at the Big 12 Match Play Championship. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about your team, but I also want to talk about the championship because I just have an absolute blast. Even when we don't play well, the experience at Houston Oaks is kind of amazing, actually. But tell me about your team. Go man for man. Where are they from? I know you've got a lot of kids from around pretty nearby, not too far away.
Yeah. So, you know, we have a very diverse group. You know, we'll start with our senior, Will Hopkins. He's from England. Will is, you know, probably our team leader. Him and Tim Tillman's our team leaders. And, you know, Will's been with our program for a while. He took his COVID year this year, so he's actually a fifth-year senior, very experienced. He's someone that's just gotten, you know, better every single year. And you know, he's one of the main ones that's really matured, especially over the last, let's say the last year. He's really matured and really starting to see how good he can be and how good he is. And you know, and he's working hard. And you know, we've kind of challenged him on his work ethic and putting in, because, you know, we see it as coaches, you know, how good he is and how good he can be. And, you know, helping him see that, and then, you know, that you need to put everything you can into it. And he's done that, and he's really, really improved. And Tim Tillman's, Tim is from Germany. Tim's another player that's come in here, our program, really improved. He's a great ball striker, big, strong kid, hits it a long way. You know, the thing we've really worked with him on is, you know, his short game's gotten a lot better. His wedges, controlling distances with his wedges. And, you know, he made regionals as an individual in 2021. And, you know, he's been very instrumental in our team, you know, in getting better. Let's see, next we probably have Luke O'Neill. Luke is a junior. Luke is from Ireland. Luke was a very highly rated recruit that we got. He won the German boys as a junior and was one of the top ranked players in Europe when we got him. And he's, you know, he's come in and has been, he's got a phenomenal short game. He's got great hands. He's a tremendous competitor. You know, he got the win last year at Carlton River. I think he played the entire tournament with one bogey. Which is pretty incredible. 54 holes, played, you know, some phenomenal golf, but he's very, very talented. Like I said, very, very competitive. Next we have, you know, Cooper Schultz. Cooper is from Wichita, Kansas. Cooper's got, you talk about, you know, a great mindset. You know, Cooper is very competitive. He's confident in himself. You know, very talented. Yeah. He's someone, you know, you were talking about Robert Streb, you know, someone that might not, you know, do everything, you know, fundamentally perfectly, but it works for him. And he, you know, he doesn't mess with it. You know, he knows his golf swing. He trusts his golf swing. He owns his golf swing. And yeah, he's probably one of the best drivers that I've seen. He's just, he hits it long. He hits it really straight. And he's very confident. And he's, and it, you know, the thing with him is he's just keeps getting better with, you know, with that confidence. You know, you kind of have to, you know, you don't want to break that competitive spirit, but you also got to say, okay, he can be really aggressive in these situations, and these situations you got to be maybe a little bit more conservative. And he's really growing up and maturing and being able to manage his game and learning the art of patience. I guess that's really big with him. And trying to eliminate the big numbers that that he tended to have when he was younger, and he's being much more consistent. Short game is getting better. I think he's got tremendous upside. And so he's a sophomore for us. He also won the Kansas Amateur last year. So he's done some really good stuff. Did really well at the U.S. Amateurs at Oakmont. So he's got a ton of potential. Nick Mason. Nick came to us from, he's from Kansas City area. He's someone that I recruited really hard. He's one of those guys that he's very athletic. He's a really, really good basketball player in high school. I love those guys. I love those athletes, the guys that are play other sports. And he's got a very, you know, competitive mindset, you know, very good golfer. He's strong. He's athletic. He gets the ball a long way. And then he's just continuing to get better. He's been getting really working hard on wedges and short game and becoming more consistent. He's probably been one of our more consistent players this fall. And he's just a sophomore. He's continued to get better and better. Lorenz Shergan. Lorenz is a sophomore. He joined us last spring. He came to us from Germany. What I like about Lorenz is Lorenz actually was a really, really good junior player. And then he went into the German military for 2 years. And then he came to us as a 20-year-old freshman last spring. So very mature, really hard worker, another grinder, you would say. He's got, you know, great hands around the greens, and he's a really, really good putter. He's probably the best putter we have on our team. And then that, you know, when you can putt well, that kind of keeps you in every single round. So he's been really good for us. And then Ethan Miller. Ethan is a senior on our team from Texas, and, you know, he got to play quite a bit for us last year. Another really athletic player that's improved since he's been here. It's been tough for him getting him in the lineup this year because, you know, we've been really strong with our top six, but, you know, he's someone that's working hard and getting better for us. And then lastly, we have one freshman on our team, Ben Stoller, comes to us from Owosso, Oklahoma. You know, Ben's a great player. He was highly recruited, won the Oklahoma 6A championship. You know, he's coming in, gotten some experience. He got to play a match, you know, for us in match play, did really well. You know, got to play in our home tournament. And he's someone's going to be really, really good. He works really hard, loves the game of golf. He's a great teammate. Really excited about the future he has.
That's great.
So we have seven players on our roster right now. So
yeah, that's also a good size roster. I like that. You know, COVID has brought about pretty big rosters lately, and I think we have 9 on our team right now. And I know of some teams that have 13, 14, even 15 people. So that's pretty good size if they're all competitive players, don't you think?
Yeah, I like having the smaller team, but you know, you also, if you can get, you know, eight or nine, you know, really good players that are really competitive, I think that's an ideal number. And it just helps with the team camaraderie, helps with team morale, and then you know, also when you have a roster that small, you know, usually everyone's getting a chance to play. You know, mm-hmm. You know, whether it's individual tournaments or playing as individuals, and you know, that helps keep you motivated.
I know that every time you leave on the road with 5 players in the team, you want as few kids at home unhappy as possible. So, but you know, we mentioned Robert Streb, and we talked about Jim Colbert, and you mentioned a couple of your players that are kind of gritty and maybe do it their own way. And mm-hmm. I think we coaches, unfortunately, when we go to tournaments to recruit and watch and see players, I think we see, oh, that's a great golf swing, or look at that physical talent or whatever. And we overlook guys like Robert Streb, and we just shouldn't do it, but we do. So right. I'm going to say this. I'm going to go back and recruit the following players for my team. You ready?
Yeah.
Bruce Litsky, kind of the inside backswing, come over the top, hit a cut every time, don't practice at all during the winter. Jim Furyk, Lee Trevino, Miller Barber, and Matthew Wolf. That's my top five, and I'll go to the national championship with those five guys. What do you think?
Heck yeah, you would.
Heck yeah, I would. But no, I appreciate you giving me the information about your team. They're obviously doing a lot of really good things, and I know your fan base and your alumni base has got to be really excited just about kind of the uptick in the competitive level that you guys have created. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Let's talk about the face of college. Oh, we were going to call it about match play first. A-12 match play.
Yep.
I love it. I think it's a blast. And this year we did not play well. We won one match. We almost tied another. We didn't quite do it. We didn't play very well. But I'm okay with it because you get to see a lot about your players head-to-head against other players. And what do you get out of this tournament every year?
I love it. And if you ask our players, you know, man to man, each one of them will tell you it's their favorite tournament that they play in all year. It's just something about that match play. And it's just, you know, that you're just going up against head to head against another team. And it's just probably the most pure team thing that you can do with golf. And especially the way we do it when you're playing with another player, we have two matches going on in the same group. So you can have that kind of camaraderie going on with that. But you're right. You learn a lot about your players, you know, in a match play situation. You know, it's like, you know, every hole there's pressure and, you know, just seeing how they can and withstand that. And, you know, I saw some really good things from our guys this week, some just incredible, you know, up and downs from everybody, you know, from, you know, other teams as well. And it's just, you know, something about the, you know, that match play when you have to hit a shot or you have to make a putt and, you know, watching some guys come through with that. It's pretty cool.
It is very cool. We had a young player, Drew Wrightson, who's a sophomore play. He got subbed in to play and he was playing a second match, I think, and came up to the last hole and he hit it in a dead spot. I mean, really bad, in a low collection area and had no green to work with. And his opponent had a 12-footer for birdie, and he was one up. So in order to win the match, he has to get it up and down. Just made a great, great pitch shot up there to about 4 feet and made the putt, which I didn't think he'd keep the ball in the green. So it was an amazing shot. But that was a big moment for him. And I told him after the round, you know, those moments help a guy's career a lot because you find out what you can do. So that's really good. I'm glad you appreciate it. I think – really, most of the coaches in the league love it. I think they enjoy coming back every year. So,
yeah, I think you're right. I think it's, you know, it's really evolved into a great event. And then, you know, it doesn't get much better than Houston Oaks and just like the entire setup there, you know, the housing and the food and everything being right there together. And I think it's also a great match play course. There's just so many risk reward holes. And, you know, you can also set it up where you can, you know, you can have some big swings, you know, holes you can make eagles on and, you know, holes you can make big numbers on as well. So
it's absolutely. It's and they great, treat us so well. They treat us so well when we get to Houston Oaks and obviously the housing. We're not staying in a Motel 6, I can tell you that.
No, we're not.
Really, really nice spot. So
yeah, we're spoiled there.
Very much looking forward to going back every year. All right, let's talk about college golf. It's a lot different than when you and I first got in. What year did you actually get in? You didn't mention the year earlier.
Coaching wise, my first year coaching was 1998.
Okay. Mine was 97. In those days, they had a max. You could pay an assistant coach with $16,000. That was the max.
Right.
And
I was one of those.
Yeah, I was too. And Mike Holder made me the director of instruction at Carston Creek so that I could teach and actually supplement that income. And I was able to do it. But, you know, and less than half the teams or right at half the teams had an assistant coach. And that was even at the Power Five level. Not all the teams had them at the Power Five level. So it's changed a lot. Obviously, there's like we just talked about your facilities. That's different. We talked about all the golf tournaments we get to play and the great golf courses we play. That's probably a little bit different. But some other things in recent years have changed it. So I'm going to ask you about these and see how it's affected you as a coach or your team or just what you think of college golf.
Sure.
So the one would be COVID, which obviously changed everybody's world, not just in college golf, the transfer portal and NIL. So those three things to me kind of make college golf look different than it used to. What do you think about that?
Yeah. So, you know, COVID, just there's just a number of challenges with that. Obviously, you know, missing an entire spring season like we did, you know, not having a championship. And then, you know, that next fall was pretty weird, you know, with some schools being able to play and some schools not being able to play. And then, you know, you're basically stressed every week whether you're going to have all your players or not because you're having to test and everything. So, you know, that was a very challenging time. And then also with the budget constraints and, you know, all sorts of things that you're dealing with, you know, from all areas. And then you've got the, you know, trying to manage a roster and, you know, with the COVID year that's been granted and, you know, like everybody, you know, you're pretty much, you know, have guys committed, you know, 2 or 3 years in advance and, you know, trying to make that all work and fit and that sort of stuff has been a challenge. So yeah, it's, you know, I think we're finally getting back to some normalcy and things are, you know, starting to, you know, hopefully get back to where it was before.
Well, one thing that we didn't have was the transfer portal when you and I got in. So that's a little bit different thing too.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And it's, yeah, hey, yeah, different opinions on the transfer portal. You know, it's the thing is, you know, with college golf, you've always been able to transfer and play right away. But there was a procedure that you went through. You know, you met with the coach and you know, you got your release and, you know, and then you go from there. And now I think it's been so publicized so much, you know, with the other sports that, you know, it's just becoming, I don't know if you say a trend, but, you know, it's just like, all right, I think it just sends the wrong message. You know, if things aren't going well, then I'm just going to put my name in the portal and go somewhere else. And I think that's the wrong message that you want to send. Obviously, there are times when it can be good, you know, in certain situations, but, you know, I think you need to have a face-to-face meeting with the coach and just be communication on both ends. And, you know, if things aren't working out, then, you know, let's figure out why and, you know, let's make the best decision for both parties.
Well, thank you for making that comment. I didn't prompt you on that either. It's like I've been outspoken about, I think the one thing they're missing on this is the face-to-face meeting with the coach. So I think if the player wants to leave, that's fine. I mean, there's times in life when you need a new situation, but you ought to be able to have the player and his parents meet in an office with the coach and an administrator, and let's just talk it out. And if nothing can be reconciled, you can sign the release form and let him go. But the way it is now, they don't even have to do that. You don't even have to have a meeting with the coach. You're just gone if you want. And I don't think we're sending at all a good message to young players that, okay, you don't like your situation, just leave. If I don't like my situation, then I will go talk to the person that I'm having a problem with and deal with it that way. But I don't see that happening with this at all. So anyway, I'm not against the portal itself. I'm just against the way we're able to get in there without even meeting.
Right. Yeah. Same.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we agree on that one. not that we were going to get in a fight. We're not going to do that. But so NIL, that's a different deal as well. That's something with, even though it hasn't affected golf that much, it's not like a quarterback in football or something, but it is a different element, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a different element. And, you know, who knows where this is all going to go. You know, for us, we haven't seen a huge effect with it yet with golf. But, you know, things are just, you know, steadily evolving. And then, you know, you're seeing it with the other sports and, you know, all the schools are starting their collectives and, you know, how that all works out. And, you know, it's an interesting time in college athletics, that's for sure. And, you know, who knows the direction we're going to keep going, but, you know, you hate to see the pure amateurism, you know, of it and the pureness of college sports get diminished in any way, but appears we're headed that way.
Well, we are headed that way. And, you know, somebody criticized me one time for my take on this. You know, it's like, oh, you're just old fashioned and you're not modernizing with the wave of the future and all that. I said, I get it. I'm going to have to operate in this world. It's part of the world I live in. So I've got to do the best I can in that world. But it doesn't mean I have to always think that these changes are always good or always benefit. Sometimes, but I'll adjust and I'll adapt. I'm sure you will as well.
You know, I think players should be able to profit off their name, image, and likeness. And, you know, if they want to promote, you know, something, or, you know, they should be able to, and in golf, they should be able to, you know, make something for promoting their, you know, if they're using their name, image, and likeness. But, you know, when you're using it as a recruiting inducement, and, you know, then it's, you know, almost getting to be a pay for play, then that's, you know, where we have an issue with it. I think, you know, the intent of the NIL, I think, is good. You know, players should be able to profit off their name, image, and likeness. But, you know, when it becomes, you know, whoever has the most money to offer players, then, you know, that could be a whole separate issue.
It will be. It will be. But I'm okay with it. I'm with you. Name, image, and likeness, that's something, that's one thing, but the right. other probably isn't healthy for what we're doing. So anyway, talk about your spring schedule. We've got a pretty varied spring schedule. We'll be all over the place, a couple times in Texas and a couple times out west. Where are you all going this spring?
So, you know, we've kind of decided to go a little bit easier in the fall, and then our spring is a little bit heavier. So we only played four events this fall. I just think, you know, in college golf, you start in January and then you play a spring schedule, and then the guys go, you know, straight from postseason to play tournaments over the summer, and then they come back in the fall. And then, you know, I've noticed, you know, when you get to late October, you know, you see some fatigue there, you know, from all the tournaments that they've been playing for months. So we decided, you know, play maybe a smaller schedule in the fall. And then, you know, we start back up in the spring. We go down the Mobile Bay Intercollegiate in Alabama. We start there mid-February. We go from there, we go to the Carlton River Collegiate in South Carolina. Just love that golf course and just phenomenal tournament. The people there just do a fantastic job. Then there's a new tournament was started. It's hosted by Rutgers. I'm going to be at Sea Island on the Seaside course in mid-March. So we're going to go to that event. Then we're going to go to Houston, playing the All-American in mid-March. And then to Mossy Oak at Mississippi State. And then to Missouri, and then Big 12s at Prairie Dunes. So we've got a really good schedule. I'm very excited about it. And, you know, I'm already looking forward to the spring for sure.
Well, that's a really great schedule. And you mentioned Prairie Dunes, which is one of the three places where my ashes will be spread one day. I love it. And I hope they spread some of them on number two. It's one of my favorite short par threes in the entire world. I don't know how you can have a par three that has no water, no out of bounds, and is only 150 yards and is that good. It is phenomenal. So,
yeah.
Are you one of those people with me that's just amazing?
It's amazing. Just the whole golf course is amazing. And, you know, if you look at it, you play it on a calm day, which is very, very rare. Obviously, it's, you know, okay, yeah, it's a good golf course. But I just remember my first Big 12s there. And, you know, I remember the first round, how hard the wind was blowing. But I think it was the second day. We cut the first day to 18 holes because the balls weren't staying on the greens. It was blowing so hard. So we had to move the 36-hole day to the second day. And I remember the first round, it was, you know, pleasant Prairie Dune standards. You know, it was maybe 65 degrees and, you know, a south wind of about 15 to 20 or so. And by the afternoon round, it completely flipped. It got colder. There was a 25-mile-an-hour, 30-mile-an-hour north wind. And just how different that golf course can play and how differently it played in the same day was just, you know, it was amazing. And it's just, you know, not every hole plays the same. And it's just got a lot of mystique to it. And it's just a really, really cool place.
Well, like I said, that's where part of me is going to spend eternity. I just love that place. But that's great. I look forward to seeing you. I won't see you at any event until then. So I look forward to seeing you at Prairie Dunes, and congratulations again on a great fall season. You guys were just fantastic this fall and representing the Big 12 in a great way. And I just want to wish you the best of luck off season, and then we'll see you at Prairie Dunes.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Mike.